If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight inside me. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a hard and if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside of me. Running down with life, I'm if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you run down my country, man. You're walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fight inside of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, so much more to talk about. Some of it not good news at all. We got word today from Monica Schaefer. We got word on Thursday from Germany that on Thursday, political prisoner Alfred Schaefer was hit with 18 more months in prison. He'd already been sentenced last year to 38 months in prison. That's 3 years and 2 months in prison. The Crown of the state was not happy with the sentence. They wanted 2 years, so they're appealing it. Now, you may say, well, what did he do? Well, what he did was he defended himself in court. But you see, that's not allowed either. Well, it depends. If as Monica explains, if you are in charged under the notorious Section 130 of the German Criminal Code, that's spreading racial hatred that would incite them, that could incite the masses. They may ask, "Well, what's that?" Well, it's a good question. What is that? Essentially, though, that's questioning the Hollywood version of World War II. Even though that's not even necessarily particularly about race. But it doesn't matter. So if you're charged with that, you cannot defend yourself by repeating that. Or try to explain, as Alfred did at great length, by going over many of his videos, how he came to his views. Now, his defense was something like this. Even if I am wrong, I have good reasons to be for the views I hold, and here they are. Well, doing that's an additional crime. And this poses a very big problem, not only for defendants in Germany, but for their lawyers. Because lawyers have gone to jail, like Sylvia Stolz, who's been repeatedly jailed. But she was jailed the first time for her spirited defense of Ernst Zundel, trying to explain his views on the so-called Holocaust, that the Holocaust on scientific bases, the standard account could not be true. Anyway, Alford faces 18 more months in jail. So, in total, 5 years, less 2 months. This, in a country that pretends to be a democracy, this is, of course, total intellectual terrorism. And as Monica says, she concludes a very emotional letter to informing her family particularly of this. And when I put this up on the internet a few hours ago, I edited out some of the remarks that are particularly aimed at the family. This is no secret, so I'll repeat it. She comes from a very divided family. There are originally five siblings. One died, but of the four remaining, two, Monica, that is, and her brother Alfred, are strong revisionists in favor of freedom of speech. The other two are just as strongly, they utterly reject their siblings' views. I don't want to characterize them as believers. I don't know if they believe in the so-called Holocaust. It's just that they would rather not discuss it. And that's pretty much where it stands. So that's got to be categorized in the bad news department. In the good insight department, this is Pat Buchanan's most recent column. Joe Biden goes all in on the race issue, and Pat, of course, is a shrewd observer of the human scene, and his column features a picture of LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, one of the great southern traitors of the white race, signing, I think this was the Civil Rights Act of 1965. Migrants have been crossing the Mexican border at the rate of 100,000 a month. If one had to choose a word to describe graphically what's going on, it would be invasion. 100,000 a month times 12 is 1.2 million. That's bigger than all but a very handful of American cities, like Los Angeles, Houston, New York. I'm not even sure that's bigger than Boston. By any estimate, that's an invasion. Those who believed America's racial divide would begin to close with the Civil Rights Act of the 1960s and the election of a black president in this century appear to have been overly optimistic. The race divide seems deeper and wider than at any time in our lifetimes. Most of the aspiring leaders of the Democratic Party have apparently concluded that branding the president a racist and white supremacist is the strategy to pursue to win the nomination and the White House. Here is Joe Biden speaking in Iowa as President Donald Trump was visiting the wounded communities of Dayton, Ohio, and El Paso, Texas. Quote, this is Biden. This president has fanned the flames of white supremacy in this nation. The energetic embrace of this president by the darkest hearts and the most hate-filled minds in this country says it all. Quote, we have a problem with this rising tide of white supremacy in America. And we have a president who encourages and emboldens it. Now, that's pretty clear. What had Trump done to invite such a charge? The key piece of evidence linking Trump to the mass murderer of El Paso is a single phrase out of a 2,000-word manifesto posted on social media, allegedly by the gunman minutes before carry out his atrocity. Patrick Crucius said he was striking this blow against the Hispanic southern border, they're striking this blow against the Hispanic invasion of Texas. Those were his words, the Hispanic invasion of Texas. And Donald Trump has often used that term, invasion, to describe the crisis on the border. Yet the word invasion, to label what is happening on America's southern border, long predated Trump, and moreover, is both an accurate and valid description. Consider,
there are, by most estimates, at least 11 million migrants in the United States illegally. In other words, they're illegals. The equivalent of the entire population of Cuba. Lately, migrants have been crossing the Mexican border at a rate of 100,000 a month. If one had to choose a word to describe graphically what is going on, it would be an invasion. What a panicked establishment and its stable candidates is doing is transparent. By declaring invasion, a legitimate description of what's transpiring on the southern border, to be inherently racist, it is conceding the word has power and is an effective weapon in the political arsenal of those the establishment seeks to censor, stigmatize, and silence. Trump's adversaries want to stop him from using his most powerful and compelling arguments and images, the ones that enabled him to win the presidency and oust them from power. They've never, ever, ever forgiven losing power in 2016. The left is now using white supremacy as a new hate term because racist has all but lost its sting from overuse. But Biden's raising of the race issue is going to come back and bite him. Said Joe in Iowa, our president has more in common with George Wallace than George Washington. Yet that greatest of the founding fathers, George Washington, whom Biden invoked as his beau ideal of a leader, was a slave owner and demonstrably more of a white supremacist than Donald Trump. And Biden is likely to be reminded of this by Senator Cory Booker, his rival for the crucial black vote in the primaries, who, as Joe was speaking in Iowa, was at Emmanuel A.M.E. Zion Church in Charleston, South Carolina, tearing into the founding generation of Washington, Jefferson, and Madison. Quote, bigotry was written into our founding documents, said Booker. White supremacy has always been a problem in American society. Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, homophobia, xenophobia, misogyny. These tactics aren't a new perversion, Booker went on. They've been ingrained in our politics since our foundation. Well, he's a black ignoramus, that's what he is. Virtually nobody in America considered blacks as equals to whites in 1776. They didn't. Not just George Washington. The people who did not want to separate from England, it was widely believed that blacks were inferior. Now, whether they would be considered human beings or some form of higher animal or something like that might be another matter. But there were different beliefs back then. And all of these alleged sins, in most cases, the name for the sin disguises the fact that the views are being criticized are valid. For instance, Islamophobia. Well, that's fear of Muslims. There's perhaps a good reason to be fearful of Muslims. Most of the horrific terrorist acts in the world in the past 20 years are being carried on by radical Muslims. The massacre of Christians that continues through much of the Middle East, including places like Pakistan, is perpetrated by Muslims. It's not Christians going around killing Muslims anyway. So Islamophobia is legitimate. Anti-Semitism means criticism of Jews. Well, there's very good reason to criticize Jews. Homophobia, that's fear of homosexuality. Well, there's legitimate reason to fear homosexuals recruiting young children. There's also legitimate reason to criticize homosexuality to the extent it's a choice or the practice of homosexuality as an ideal or acceptable life choice. Xenophobia, well, that's fear of the stranger. Well, if the stranger means to come in and invade your country, mooch your resources and so on, there's never good reason to be afraid. Anyway, back to Pat Buchanan. Are American voters supposed to respond warmly to this? Biden's words in Iowa, we have a president who has aligned himself with the darkest forces in this nation, appear to be a lift from Robert Kennedy's attack on Lyndon Baines Johnson when Bobby announced for the presidency just days after Johnson was badly wounded in the 1968 New Hampshire primary. And by that, for those of you who were not around in 1968, that wasn't a physical wounding. Lyndon Johnson wasn't shot or anything. Said Bobby, of the father of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, our national leadership is calling upon the darker impulses of the American spirit. LBJ and his associates, Bobby went on, have removed themselves from the American tradition, from the enduring and generous impulses that are the soul of this nation. We are fighting for the soul of America, Biden said in Iowa. He's for good reason. Donald Trump calls him Sleepy Joe. As for Wallace, whom Biden disparages, he was a segregationist, much like Biden's patron, Senator James Eastland of Mississippi, who called Joe son, and Strom Thurmond, whom Biden eulogized and who conducted the longest filibuster in history against the 1957 Civil Rights Act. Strom Thurmond had been a Democrat and then ran for president as a Dixiecrat in 1948 to oppose their so-called civil rights program. In George Wallace's salad days, Joe Biden sang a different tune, telling the Philadelphia Inquirer on October 12, 1975, I think the Democratic Party could stand a liberal George Wallace, someone who's not afraid to stand up and offend people, someone who wouldn't pander but would say what the American people know in their gut is right. Perhaps Joe can become such a fearless leader in 2020. The fact is, Joe Biden is a political whore and a chameleon. What he really believes, who knows? But he was quite prepared to cooperate with segregationists back in the 1960s as a way to get ahead. There were other prominent Democrats, you might call them blue Democrats, who recognized the power of the George Wallace vote and tacitly went along with them. Now, though, the Democratic Party has become absolutely clearly the party of minorities. And really, there's no place in the present Democratic Party for whites. I mean, that is, unless you are LGBTQ, radically pro-Israel, a self-hater, or a freak. It just no longer represents in any way, shape, or form white working class or white farmers. And Biden has moved with the radical times and is basically singing out of another hymn, and not very eloquently. And I heard him say the other day in an interview on CNN, and I'm not quite, if this was not tied to anything in particular, but he said that white supremacy is winning. I think most of us who are white nationalists don't particularly like the term white supremacy. I know it had a place maybe 50 years ago. I think most of us today would be a lot happier with the term white nationalist. And I see white supremacy really as something a little different. White supremacy it involves wanting to impose your views on others, or our ways of civilization. And I see that more accurately represented by somebody like George Bush, or those who want to regime change in the Middle East because our way is better to export democracy. Well, for a whole lot of reasons, that's not a good idea. And while other nations can learn from us and adapt our ways to theirs, to impose it militarily. It's not only wrong, it's dumb. Anyway, that would be my example of a white supremacist, and I'm an isolationist, and I'm the exact opposite of that. But we talked yesterday about the Democratic Socialist Convention, and this is not the Democratic Party. These are Democratic Socialists, some of whom are in the Democratic Party, and it was an example of the mental illness that is beginning to infect the Democratic Party. I want to thank Rachel for passing this my way, and this is about a 9-minute segment from the Chris Salcido show, the Democratic Socialist Convention. It's entitled, "Is This the Future?"
We were voice activated.
Yeah, first time caller, long time listener.
Before voice activation was a thing.
Alexa, open WBAP.
Okay, I've got to bring this up. I got to bring this up because it was referenced by the last caller, folks, that this is the Democrat Socialist Convention. And they're there to defeat capitalism. They're there to defeat free enterprise and America's economy, so that we are like the rest of these other S-hole countries all over the world, burdened with anti-freedom, socialist, communist filth. So this is what they're gathered, all these leftists are gathered to do, and then somebody uses a non-gender neutral pronoun, and the whole place goes nuts. Listen to this.
Great. Quick point of privilege, quick point of personal privilege. Yeah. Guys, first of all, James Jackson, Sacramento, he, him. I just want to say, can we please keep the chatter to a minimum? I'm one of the people who's very, very prone to sensory overload. There's a lot of whispering and chatter going on. It's making it very difficult for me to focus.
Okay, first off, did you guys hear the offense? He said, guys and him, he, him. He said, guys and he, him. And then he says, look, I just, all the whispering... It's just, I'm really prone to sensory overload, so it's all about me. And he started fanning himself. Oh my God, I'm verklempt. Stop it, it's all about me. You all have to accommodate me because that's why we're here. We're all socialists. We're all supposed to accommodate me because we're socialists, you know. We're all collectivists. We're all, you know, it's just... And then he used the terms guys and he, him. And that led, well, to this.
In chapter
privilege. Point of personal privilege. Please do not use gendered language to address everyone.
he's literally hyperventilating. Don't use gendered language. It's the thought police. It's the speech police all gathered in one room and they're policing themselves. This is wonderful.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, I'm right there. That was done on the 5, kids. It's amazing. And we have to make laws to accommodate those freaks? Seriously? No way. There's no way I'm putting anybody like that in political power. No way. That'll be the end of us. You know what it reminds me of? That complete idiot on MSNBS.
Said that we will fly our flags at half mast until August 8th. That's 8-8. Now, I'm not going to imply that he did this deliberately, but I am using it as an example of the ignorance of the adversary that's being demonstrated by the White House. The numbers 8-8 are very significant in neo-Nazi and white supremacy movement. Why? Because the letter H is the 8th letter of the alphabet. And to them, the numbers 8-8 together stand for Heil Hitler.
Ah, so, you know, when Barack Obama did things on August 8th throughout his entire occupation of the Oval Office, did you see these nutbags coming out of every crevice to say, you can't do anything on 8-8, that's a Nazi holiday. These people are completely idiots. I mean, 100% idiots. We shouldn't be accommodating them, folks. We should have red flag laws for liberals. Seriously, we ought to have red flags in this country for people like this guy. For people like the socialists. Somebody needs to get out of, don't use gender pronouns. They need to be in a mental institution. My friends. Let me get out to Rockwall. Mike, I appreciate you being as patient as you have been. Welcome to Salcedo Show.
It was well worth it to hear that little soundbite you just played. Uh-huh. Oh, my God. Sensory. I bet the instructions on a shampoo bottle are sensory overload for that person. My goodness. I'm glad you found
thanks to the caller and thanks to the crack production staff, or the production staff on crack here. And,
The Chris Salcedo Show. Found the video, found the soundbite in like 2 minutes. Wow, it's pretty good staff you got there, man.
Well, they are the finest in the industry, I got to tell you.
Yeah, they are. Earlier when you were talking about Oprah, you mentioned building resentment. Man, see, you just fly by these brilliant, profound things, and you don't even realize how smart they are. That is absolutely what is going on, building resentment. All of this nonsense that we have been seeing from the Democrats and the leftists, it's like the insanity is built. I mean, I'm angered by what I hear, but my solution is going to be to vote, not go shoot people. Yeah, you know, that's the solution. We've got to vote these nut jobs out. And
Mike, I want you to remember, and I want everybody to remember with the sound of my voice, every single time a Democrat has called you a racist, every single time a Democrat has called you a white supremacist, just for disagreeing with them, and then let that drive you and maybe 400 of your close friends to the polls. Because chances are, if you're driven nuts by this, there's a lot of other folks out there who are too.
Read the story of the boy who cried wolf when they called me a racist and stuff. I go, you know what? You've worn that word out. Nobody's even listening to that nonsense anymore.
By the way, Mike, the race card has expired, right? The race card, after two terms of resident Barack Obama, the race card has expired. You libs can't play that anymore and have any credibility. And they're out there, you know what? And this, Mike, this is the worst thing. There are many people in the black community who are happy to be working. There are many people in the black community who see rising wages. Many people in the black community who are raised seeing Donald Trump being praised by Jesse Jackson and those in the black community. And they're not buying the Democrats about face on this simply because he changed party affiliations. They're not buying it. And that's the good news. And neither is the Latino community. Folks, I'm hearing from liberty-loving Latinos all over the country now who are saying, I'm an enthusiastic backer of Donald Trump, because he stands up for the rule of law. And I oppose Julian Castro. And I oppose Joaquin Castro because they are against the rule of law. Because many Latinos, contrary to what the aptly named Castro brothers think, many Latinos get it. They realize the reason why America is so great is because we are a nation of laws. Let me get out to Dallas. Chris is waiting. Hello, Chris. Welcome to Salcedo Show.
Hey, Chris. Just wanted to comment real quickly on the Democratic Socialist Convention. It's funny to listen to. It's easy to make fun at because they're all a caricature of themselves.
Yeah.
But it's also dangerous. And we can't take our eye off of that. But if we listen to the way they talk to each other, the way they propel language at one another, if that movement ever gets enough momentum that they can force political change, and you see some of the things here that you see in Canada where certain language must be used, if they are that aggressive and compelling language within their own group with people who agree with them, what are they going to be like when they interact with folks who disagree with them?
Chris, I want to ask you a question, because actually you've made a brilliant point. And I want to ask you a question. Let's say a Latina for this network called Telemundo Noticias was interviewing President Trump. And the reporter said, President Trump, would you ever consider, and she's, by the way, she's an attractive Latina, would you ever consider a Latino for a running mate? And Donald Trump responded, hey, are you available? What would be the narrative the next day from the biased press?
Yeah, he was hitting on her.
He was a womanizer, lech, all this kind of stuff, right? Yeah, okay.
Sure.
Let me play something for you. Hold on a second.
If you have to choose...
Si tuviera que elegir un compañero de fórmula ahora, ¿quién sería?
Are you available?
That's Joe Biden, folks. Joe Biden asking this attractive Latina reporter, are you available to run as a running mate? But he's allowed because he has professed his disgust with his own skin color. He has turned all of his policies on its ear. He has betrayed his Catholic faith. He's good. And so he can get away with womanizing somebody in front of a camera. But Donald Trump can't. Why? Not because there's any moral consistency, Chris. but because the biased press is in the tank for one political.
And that's quite accurate. I didn't want to play the whole show, but there's a very good initial discussion about these whack jobs in the Democratic Socialist Convention. This is the mental illness that they are trying to impose upon us in Canada. Did you hear how it seemed like a male voice, God only knows, but was freaking over the gender, he, she. I wasn't even clear that whether he was saying that I am he, she, that is, I'm totally messed up, or whether he was saying that that's what he was objecting to. It's clear that these people are mentally ill, and this is what they would like to impose on us, and it's coming if they gain political power, and that's the big fear. And until very recently, they were only on the very, very fringes, but now with people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others, they're perhaps just a little closer. I think this is a real worry that they will gain power, and that as they infiltrate the Democratic Party. This is a very good comment, which is being attacked as racist by Tucker Carlson. On Ilhan Omar, she's the Somali who's a congresswoman from Minnesota. Let's see here. This is Tucker Carlson saying that the allegations of white supremacy are a hoax. I'm going to try to get this to play here. Tucker, the white supremacy hoax.
As part of their relentless bid to divide this country, Democrats have been warning about white supremacy relentlessly. It's actually not a real problem in America. The combined membership of every white supremacist organization in this country would be able to fit inside a college football stadium? I mean, seriously, this is a country where the average person is getting poorer, where the suicide rate is spiking. White supremacy, that's the problem. This is a hoax. Just like the Russia hoax, it's a conspiracy theory used to divide the country and keep a hold on power. That's exactly what's going on.
The white supremacists are American citizens.
This is the, in print, the outrage from the Huffington Post. President Donald Trump retweeted a clip from Fox News host Tucker Carlson, who's facing a backlash for claiming that the notion of white supremacy the white supremacy problem in the U.S. is a hoax created by the left and the media. Well, he's right. The video created by the Daily Caller, a conservative news site that Carlson co-founded, features the Fox host discussing and questioning the legitimacy of Representative Ilhan Omar, she's a Democrat from Minnesota, her prior marriage, immigration status, and name. Omar, an American citizen, was born in Somalia and immigrated to the United States as a child. The sham marriage that Carlson refers to is a popular right-wing theory that Omar married her brother in order to bypass U.S. immigration laws. There is some information on the internet about that. Some people claim it's false, but there's a lot of talk about the fact that she was married to her brother, Trump told reporters last month. I know nothing about it. Trump has a history of upset about that. it would be impossible to have had the news on in the past 24 hours and not have heard about the suicide in New York City in a federal institution of notorious kitty diddler and child molester pedophile ring organizer Jeffrey Epstein. He was in prison and facing 45 years in prison for a second conviction of running a pedophile ring. And the names associated with that ring include some very important people. Bill Clinton, for one. The very voluble friend, media favorite, lawyer Alan Dershowitz. Former New England, New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson. Former U.S. Senator George Mitchell and asset manager Glenn Dubin. Among the guests Epstein's getaways, according to pilot David Rogers, were Bill Clinton, Negro actress, model Naomi Campbell, and even the Prince Andrew, one of Queen Elizabeth's children. Now, to be fair, to be a guest of his doesn't necessarily mean that you're a pedophile. Let's be fair. But 1,200 pages were released just Friday by judges, 1,200 out of perhaps more than 10,000 pages from other legal proceedings involving Epstein. And after months of legal wrangling, a Manhattan court released 1,200 documents on Friday detailing lurid claims of the alleged abuse carried out by Jeffrey Epstein against teenage girls. The filing related to the case of Giffre versus Maxwell, in which Virginia Giffre, who claims to have been the U.S. businessman's teenage sex slave, sued Ghislaine Maxwell, a British socialite, and the billionaire's former girlfriend, for defamation, but for calling her a liar. Anyway, the accusation was that Ghislaine Maxwell was pretty much the den mother and a procurer of underage girls for Maxwell Epstein and his friends, and that she kind of managed the girls. She is the describer as a socialite. She is the daughter of Robert Maxwell, who is a British publisher, a Czech Jew, and a Mossad agent who mysteriously died at sea. Was he drowned? Did he commit suicide about 20 years ago? Anyway, there's, of course, widespread speculation about, well, just what the heck is going on here? Clearly, if he went to trial, many people have much to fear from Jeffrey Epstein, just from revelations, never mind whether he desperately tries to make a deal. And it was pointed out, I think relatively accurately today, that on the media, that Epstein had lived an amazing
the amazing lifestyle of private jets, a luxury island that he bought for himself, I believe, in the Caribbean, underage sex slave girls at his command that he could share with his buddies. He was able to worm his way into the confidence of the very, very wealthy people, including a Jew billionaire who owned the Victoria's Secrets company along with others. And for a while he was a valued employee at Morgan Stanley because he was what they might call a rainmaker. He brought them a lot of business. He knows a lot, and in the depositions already in this lawsuit, a lot of names are named. So many people probably had great fear of the upcoming trial. Jeffrey Epstein was clearly a liability, and of course he was a Mossad agent as well, and many of his close friends, not hanger-on models like Naomi Campbell, but his mover and shaker friends were also prominent Zionists. So a lot of people had a lot to lose where Jeffrey Epstein to go to trial. They're not completely out of the woods with his death, but let's just put it this way. Suicide in a cell where he apparently was supposed to be under a suicide watch because something had happened a couple weeks ago. Again, a little murky. Was he attacked and he was sort of roughed up, beaten up a bit, or had he tried to hurt himself? Somebody messed up and messed up big time. Well, this is Paul Braun. You're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to play some Ulster folk songs of course, were brought over to the United States. So many of the people in Appalachia are Ulstermen. That also, of course, sometimes called Northern Ireland.
Thank you. tin, half a pot with sugar on the top. Three black balls later we shop. My aunt Jane, she's at me and we gave me tea at a hurly tin.
And you wonder why I am so proud.
You wonder why I sing so loud. Cause my aunt Jane, she says to me, no matter where you're going to be, we're a people true and proud. So sing with pride and sing out loud. Northern Ireland! Northern Ireland! And we're a people true and proud. So sing with pride and sing out loud. Northern Ireland! Northern Ireland! My aunt Jane says, sing your tea and sing until your dying day.
And you wonder
why I am so proud.
You wonder why I sing so loud.
My Aunt Jane says, home or away, to Jordan Ireland all the way. For we're the people true and proud, to sing with pride and sing a lot.
Northern Ireland, Northern Ireland,
I will. The people true and proud, to sing with pride and sing a lot.
Northern Ireland, Northern Ireland, Northern Ireland.
A lad to love you through the good and the bad. There Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to walk. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to talk. Give me an Ulster boy who beats his drum. For at least you know where he comes from. There are men in India and Pakistan, men in China and Japan, men in Brazil.
Abiding in Cupid's fair throne. Young man, I will tell you a secret. It's true, I'm a maid that is poor. And to part from my vows and my promise is more than my heart can endure. Therefore, I'll remain at my service and go through all my hardships and toil, and wait for the lad that has left me all alone on the banks of Fair Isle. Young maiden, I wish not to banter. 'Tis true I come here in disguise. I came here to fulfill my last promise and hoped to give you a surprise. All I know is you're a maid I love dearly, and you've been in my heart all the while. For me there is no other damsel than my blooming bright star of Fair Isle. For me there is no other damsel than my blooming bright star of Fair Isle.
Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with the game tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. And Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.